Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The Phineas Club is exclusively funded by its patrons. You can become a patron as well by going to patreon.com/theFineasClub. Check it out. It's really cool. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Phineas Club. This is episode 102 for January 2018. We talk about the Kingdom of Belgium. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phineas Club. My name is Patrick Beja, and on this show, we usually talk to people from different parts of the world and get together to discuss the news from the past month, and we get different perspectives and cultures and opinions on what's been happening. Today, we're doing a special, though. We also try to do that every month. And we're going to be talking about an immensely important part of the world. And I'm sure my guest will agree. Well, I was going to keep the suspense going for a little bit, but the name of the country is in the title of the episode. So from Belgium, Guillaume is joining us. How are you doing, sir?
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me. Very happy to be here.
So we're going to be talking about Belgium, which I think is a fascinating I was going to say little country, but we're going to get into that, I think.
That's fair to say. It is pretty small.
You know, it's funny because I was looking at doing a tiny little bit of research, which actually basically means I loaded up a Wikipedia page for Belgium. And it turns out it's like 10 million people, over 10 million people.
In terms of population, it's all right. But I mean, in terms of land space, it's not so big.
Yeah, it isn't. But it's like twice the population of Finland, which admittedly is a small country.
A whole other topic.
Yeah,
I think it's about the size of Oregon in the United States. I'm not sure.
All right. Mm-hmm. So something like that. And it's, I think it's an interesting relationship that the country has to the European Union, because of course it's one of the centers of the EU, and to France, where I'm from, because it's kind of like Canada for the US, I think. It's kind of France's hat. It's the cousins we think of as like, basically you're kind of the same thing, but at the same time you have like multiple languages, and it's a strange country at the crossroads of so many things. And I'm curious to hear a little bit more about it when usually, you know, it's not a country many people in the world pay attention to. So I'm curious to see if we're going to have some interesting tidbits from you. Before we start talking about your country, though, can you tell us about yourself? Who are you? What do you do?
Trick said, my name is Guillaume. I'm pretty young. I'm 23. I'm a tech kind of person. I have a startup. I recently dropped out of college, and English, French, used to speak Dutch when I was much younger. Now, not so much. We'll get into that. I listen to a lot of podcasts, play a lot of video games, and so that's how I know Patrick.
So you're 23, you said. So
that's
basically
right.
you're a millennial. And you mentioned,
I think millennials are like between half of the 80s and half of the 90s, I think.
Okay, yeah, no, you're right. So you're post-millennial. I was joking on Twitter. I wasn't sure how you would call post-millennials. Like the
post-millennials is pretty much which the term we use, I think.
It's like the generation that has inherited the broken, messed up world that we're leaving for you guys. So yeah, good luck. Excellent. have fun. So, I mean, talking about Belgium, you mentioned Dutch and French and English. There's German in there as well.
That's
for
right.
people
That's
who
right.
don't know. For people who don't know, what the hell is Belgium, and why do you have like 15 different languages and regions and provinces and all of that?
We have three languages officially. So at the north of the country, you have Flanders, where people speak Flemish, which is very close to, I mean, it is essentially Dutch with a couple of differences. The south, we speak French, again, with some differences between the French you speak in Paris, but not a lot. And then on the border between Belgium and Germany, we have a small, tiny bit of land that we got because, as you know, we won World War I about 100 years ago. And so that's what we inherited because we won the war. So a judge decided that we should take a bit of land from Germany. And so there you have, you have the north and the south. And then in the middle of that, you have Brussels. And Brussels complicates everything. Essentially, in Brussels, officially, people speak both French and Flemish. And so when you look at stores, when you look at advertisements, you see everything in both Flemish and French. And you have schools in either Flemish or French. The police will speak to you in either Flemish or French. But if you're in the south, in Wallonia, then it's exclusively French. And if you're in the north, then it's exclusively Flemish. And this distinction between the north and the south, just about the language, if you go as far back as 2,000 years ago, when Julius Caesar conquered whole of Europe, where Brussels is, because there's a huge forest over here, and so he didn't go much further than where Brussels is. And so essentially you have the north where people speak Flemish, which is a German, Germanic language. Mm-hmm. And the south, it's a Latin language. And so this separation is not only a matter of language, it's also a very cultural difference. And there's a lot of differences on many aspects. So language is one example, but you have culture, you have economics, you have politics. Time goes on. It looks more and more like two pieces pasted together. Like it's not as united as, say, France, for instance.
I mean, obviously that would make sense. I was going to ask you, do the people outside of Brussels then regard Brussels as this like elitist town where people have to speak every language, but the outside of that capital is more entrenched? But really the picture you're painting, which makes sense, is, well, the north and south are Latin versus Germanic, and the opposition is born from there already. So Brussels is almost like a battleground where the battle happens, it feels.
I will say, if we're being completely honest, I mentioned earlier that my Flemish is not what it used to be. When I was a kid, I went to Flemish school when I was about 11, and I could speak both languages. But the fact of the matter is, in Brussels, you don't have that many people to speak Flemish with. In theory, it's both Flemish and French. And indeed, you have Dutch-speaking universities. You have Flemish TV, Flemish radio, and you can speak to the police in both French and Flemish. But in reality, like, I have a hard time finding friends that speak exclusively Flemish. In fact, when I do meet people who come from Flanders and I want to speak to them, Patrick, I don't speak Flemish with them and I don't speak French. I usually speak English with my fellow countrymen because that's much easier because everyone knows English.
So I was almost going to interrupt you and ask you why your English was so good, because it definitely feels like you have a natural, you know, it feels very natural, your English. And I suspect it might be because you listen to a lot of podcasts.
You're right. That's how it, mostly it, that.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not like every young Belgian person speaks as naturally as you do
One example, one additional difference between the North and the South is that in the North, movies on TV are not being dubbed. It's just English with Flemish subtitles. Mm. In the South, they are being dubbed in French, because actually it's just buying the dubbing from France.
Right, right.
This difference alone makes it that the Flemish population is much better at speaking English, at being multilingual, learning other languages, being open to the world. And this, you can also see that when you look at movies, when you look at Flemish movies, very Americanized, and you see Flemish movies being bought by Hollywood to get adapted to the American market. Mm. Whereas you look at movies from the South, you're going to see this very socialist, very down to roots. You see the fields of wet. It's not Americanized. It's very, very south of Belgium kind of thing.
It's, you know, it's funny because I guess it's as good a place as any to talk about this. For France, I joked about it, and I think it's an offensive, somewhat offensive view, but there is some truth to it. We look at Belgium and Switzerland to an extent, which is in a somewhat similar situation, but very different in many ways, but as like the nice little cousins that are to the side. And but really, yeah. I mean, there are some things like chocolate and beer and comics or bande dessinée, which are very uniquely, yeah.
The Smurfs.
For example. But it feels like the culture is French culture with a few tweaks. Just maybe as, and again, Canadians are going to be offended by this, but I think there is some truth to it as well. Canadian culture is very close to American culture because of the cultural influence and geographical proximity that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
But so how do you feel about that? Is that something that you think, yeah, a little bit, or is it like fist on the table? How dare you insult my country?
Can you clarify? What do I think about what?
About the fact that we look at, maybe the fact that you don't understand what I'm saying means that it's true.
Sure.
French people see Belgian as, and Belgian, you know,
culture,
you society as French with a twist, yeah?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, yeah, with a twist, underlined twist. there's definitely a certain proximity. Like, we have French TV. We can watch TF1 and France 2 and all those channels on TV.
And do you? Do Belgian people actually watch French TV?
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And so you see, like, Belgian actors in French movies and et cetera. There is definitely like a proximity because we are neighbors after all, and we do speak the same language.
Mm. Okay, so it's not offensive. Well, I mean, I'm sure it could get offensive, but it's not too offensive
How is the word cousin offensive?
I think in the worst cases, French people would look at themselves as the true, you know, French.
Kind of. Let's get into that.
You know, it's like, and I'm sure not, it's the same as, you know, Parisians will see themselves as the center of France, but, and the people outside of Paris would look at that as super, you know, self-important, which it is. Like, I think France will look at other French-speaking countries as... I don't want to go too far into it because I know I want to
because it's, I mean, it seems like deep down you have something to say, Patrick.
I'm not. No, I don't. I just think that it can be interpreted in a way that is not that goes farther than what it is. No, what I mean, I'm just saying is, said, it's like America thinking of Canada as, you know, the friends to the north, which are basically like us, so they're kind of us. So it's kind of denying their own culture a little bit. And I think there is a little bit of that happening for Belgium when compared to France. You don't pay attention to it too much. And you kind of know that there's the Flemish part somewhere. But really, it's kind of like the other people who speak French. And the important French stuff happens in France. I think that's a good summary, which, again, I understand it's not necessarily true, but that's a feeling. And I wonder if you have any response to that.
Honestly, like I've heard, I mean, I do feel a certain amount of condescendence from France when they speak of Belgians. They don't necessarily a lot of respect sometimes, depending on who you're talking to. But like, honest, I have a hard time following you. I'm having a hard time knowing what you mean exactly.
That's interesting. Well, I think it's that idea of respect might be a good way of putting it. I think
how do you say chauvinism in English?
Oh, that's a good word. Chauvinism? I think it's the same word. Yeah, there's some of that for sure. Yeah,
France. And what's interesting is that there is none of that in Belgium.
Like, oh, really?
The fact that you can't really define what the Belgian identity is makes it a lot harder to be proud of that. You can't really be proud to be a Belgian. It's the greatest nation in the world because, well, like, it's very
divided.
What does
it mean
to
be Belgian?
It's very small and very divided.
So that's a good question. For you, as I was just saying, what does it mean to be Belgian?
You're hitting me with the hard questions here, Patrick.
Just your feelings. So, it doesn't have to be universal.
I mean, I would say, so there is an article on Wikipedia about what it means about Belgitude, about Belgianism, what it means to be a Belgian. And essentially, it basically explains that being a Belgian is often... you often define what it means to be a Belgian by opposition. You say, oh, we're not this and we're not that. We're not very big and we're not very proud. And you have a hard time, Belgians have a hard time saying what they are because it is so divided that movies in the north are not like movies in the south. And languages is not the same everywhere. And like the fact that it is so divided makes it hard to be big and shiny and to really export itself. And what does it mean to be a Belgian?
I mean, for me, it would be beer, chocolate, mussels and fries,
beer is definitely, and I'm not joking here, a big part of our culture, and that you will find everywhere in the country. People who like to drink beer in university and outside of university, like basically everyone. So there's that. Yeah, sure.
Okay, so Belgian is being Belgian is liking Belgian
beer. It's actually multiculturalism and being multilingual, thing being humble. We are a lot less proud. We are much more humble, I would say.
Okay, that kind of makes sense, I guess, with everything else you've been saying. I wonder if we can talk a little bit more about that opposition, because I think to listeners, it's going to be the most interesting part. It's basically two countries in one, and I think I feel a little bit more...
What way to put it?
That's what it feels like when you're describing it. I'm sure Swiss people listening to this are going to feel some kind of kinship to your plights. But I also think, I don't get the same amount of strong division from Switzerland. I think there is a Swiss identity that is a little bit stronger. So how does it work in Belgium when you have those two very, very different parts? What kind of problems does it cause? How do you, resolve those problems to make the country work? What are the conflicts? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So, making a comparison with Switzerland, because I don't know much about Switzerland, but so like I quickly mentioned earlier, in the south you have this very agriculture. There's a lot of you're clearly in the socialist territory. Like, it's red everywhere, and in fact, in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of scandals inside the Socialist Party. And so people have started to vote more either for the Green Party, Ecolo, or for the hard left party, the PTB, which is, very, very communist, very anti-rich, etc. And so one thing I should clarify right now is that between two languages, the North and the South, but so are the political parties. So you have...
For a second. You said it's divided between the two languages and between the political parties?
The political parties are split as well. So you have a socialist party in the North and you have a socialist party in the South. And it's the same for the Green, for the center, for the right, for the hard right, the far left, etc. And so in the South, anyway, it's leaning much more towards the left. In the North, it's clearly leaning much more towards the right. And so, and again, you can see that when you look at polls, but you can also see that when you look at something that is close to my heart, which is entrepreneurship. Money startups have raised in each region. It's about... Essentially, Wallonia has about 8% of all fundraisings. And so your Brussels and Flanders have like 90% of it. And so that's, you have, not a lot of entrepreneurs in the South, much more in the North. And that's the kind of thing you see. And so it becomes really difficult. People in the South essentially stay in the South and people in the North essentially stay in the North. But when it gets really messy is when you have elections and we have one government that needs to handle both regions, one federal government. And so...
Hey, before we get to elections, let's talk about the people a little bit more. Because you say they each, the Southerners stay in the South, Northerners stay in the North, and it's the way I understand it is basically things work out, you don't have to interact with one another, it's fine. But what happens when you do? Like, do you have some preconceptions about the Flemish and vice versa? Do you have some violence, hatred? I don't know. Or maybe everyone gets along and it's all very good-spirited. I'm curious how that goes culturally.
Well, that actually the people who, so there is obviously something that is pre-required is that both Belgians, the Flemish and the Walloon, both need to speak the other language. At least
and
one
do
of them
they?
Does. Mostly, I would say no. In Brussels, like I said, I'm French-speaking. When I meet another Flemish, we usually speak English. Now, that's not representative, obviously. Actually, I would say that had I been 30 years older, had I been much older, I probably would speak French and then add a sentence here and there, you know, just because that's my vocabulary. and that's how, that's my identity. That's my culture. I'm from Brussels. I speak both. And there you go. But I think the more time goes on, the more actually you have people like me who mostly speak English when they need to interact with Flanders. Mm. And so it's kind of hard for me to answer because I'm not in a situation where I can. Mm. I would say that if they don't, which is most Walloons don't speak Flemish, then the conversation will just not work and there will be very little interaction between the two.
But it's funny. But because it seems you're kind of saying it, you don't know how it works because it almost doesn't happen. Kind of is that
I kind of yeah. I mean, yeah. That's just Flanders. Flemish are happy where they are, and they don't often. That's. It just doesn't happen that often.
That's kind of weird. So how is the population almost evenly divided between the two languages?
I think Flanders is a bit bigger, and so you have more people.
Okay. So the only time that, you know, those two halves really bump into one another is what you were getting into, which is the elections, right? And that becomes ugly.
Yeah. So, like I said, you have So the best example to describe that is the elections we had about 10 years ago, where the Socialist Party got a lot of votes in the South, and then the Nationalists, the NVA, got a lot of votes in the north. And so you had on one side one party which was very pro-Belgium because, you know, the rich Flemish people would, and then all that money would go to the south.
The rich Flemish people would what? Sorry, you're cutting off regularly here.
Sorry.
You were saying they...
I'm sorry.
That's okay. You were saying the rich Flemish people want to what?
Yeah. The... essentially, what happens is that you have a lot of rich, well-educated Flemish people who, and they pay a lot of taxes. And then that money would go to the south of the country where you have a lot of unemployment. And the Flemish were not happy with that.
Right.
And so,
do they want to separate or do they want to break the country apart?
What I hear a lot when I ask this question to my fellow countrymen in the north is that mind is usually the answer I get. It's like, it doesn't really matter to me, which again shows you how little they interact with the south because they rarely do. And so, yeah, if the country splits, then it doesn't really change a lot. And they have their own identity. They have their own culture. I was saying earlier that we're not really proud of being Belgians. There is a lot of pride in being Flemish among certain parts of Flanders. So you mix all this together and you have this NVA party, which openly says, well, now you're not going to have to go to the south of the country because we're going to split and, you know, it's going to stop.
Is the NVA a Flemish party or is it still a Belgian party?
I said earlier, when you're in Flanders, you can only vote, and I don't think I explained this actually. When you're in Flanders, you can only vote for a Flemish party. When you're in, I mean, the lists of the parties you can vote for are different based on where you are. And so if you're in the south, you have a certain list and you can tick the box you want. If you're in the north, you have a completely different list with Flemish parties. And so you have every election, you have the results from the north and the results from the south and the results from Brussels. And you need to kind of mix it all together in one single federal government.
That seems like it would never work it's pretty incredible that it does, actually, most of the time, apparently.
I mean, so I kind of like this system, actually, because it's a coalition system. And so you never have the situation you often have in France, where a party gets maybe 20, 22% of votes, and then it ends up being becoming the government, and it ends up having the presidency. That, I think, is a lot less interesting than having a having a government which represents the majority of Belgians.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more difficult to put together as a government, but it is also
You essentially, I mean, yeah, we can just put it this way. It's so hard that it sometimes takes months or even years or even up to, I think it's like about 500 days, something like that. Yeah, 541 days without a government. Yeah. Because those discussions can sometimes last this long.
That's what happened in 2010, I think, which you were referring to. And obviously, we talked about this in the Netherlands with Marleen a few months ago, and it's happening in Germany. I mean,
also have this coalition system, and they also have to deal with it by talking a lot.
I think it's true that you can point to those examples and say, well, look, sometimes you don't have a government for 500 days, and it's horrible. But obviously, it is a problem.
Actually, it's not that big of a problem because Belgium works. It's very modularized. You have ministries in the south, you have ministries in the north, you have ministries which are dedicated to. So we have this thing called communauté, and I'm not sure how I'm going to translate this in English. Yes, communities. And so you have the French community and the Flemish community. And so they have their own parliaments, they have their own governments. And so that's where they take care of, for instance, schools, the education systems. Yeah. And then in the federal government, you're going to see stuff like healthcare or foreign affairs or the defense or that kind of stuff. But
there's a lot of local. Well, so sorry, you mentioned ministries. Are they replicated, or is it just decentralized, with some of them being in the north and some of them being in the south?
Some of them are federal ministries, and so they apply to the whole country. Some of them are regional ministries, so they either for Brussels or for Flanders or for Wallonia, and some of them are community ministry, and so they apply to. So there is the French speaking ministry, and there is the Flemish ministry. The French speaking community and the Flemish community, and so there you will find ministries for instance, education. And so education has one ministry for Flemish speaking people and one ministry for French speaking people.
So does the French language community ministry there is French language teaching in Flemish land.
Flanders. Just think about the neighbor of Homer Simpson's.
Flanders. Excellent. Right. All right, that works.
There is absolutely so the courses are different in the north and in the south.
But who is in charge of it is my question. Is the Flemish Ministry of Education in charge of teaching French in Flanders, or is it the Wallonian Ministry of Education?
Wallonia takes care of... No, actually, also, okay. It's important to distinguish Wallonia and the French community, because the French community also encompasses Brussels. And the Flemish community also encompasses Brussels. So if you're in Brussels and you go to a school that's in Flemish, then essentially it's going to have to respect the rules decided by the Flemish community. But if you go to a school where they speak French, then the rules are decided by the French speaking community. Modularized kind of thing. And so that's why when you don't have a government, a federal government, I mean, then it's not really the end of the world. It's pretty bad, but it's not the end of the world because we still have the communities, we still have the regional ministries and all that stuff.
Okay, we can talk about this some more, but I do want to make a little bit of a detour through the kingdom part. Because on top of all of this, Belgium is also a kingdom. I mean, obviously it is for representation, and I'm guessing it has as much power as it does in the UK. It's interesting to me that you didn't mention this at all when we were talking about identity and what unites the country and gives a feeling of, you know, Belgium-ness.
The fact that I'm young plays a part in this. I think had you asked my father, maybe he would have mentioned the king at some point. I think the more you lean... essentially, I think younger populations have a lot less respect for the royal figure. So we do have a king called Philippe de Belgique. And he lives in his palace, not far from where I live. And when the elections happen and political parties decide who is going to be the prime minister, like, he needs to sign off on that. And when the prime minister gives his resignation, then he needs to sign off on that. And the laws,
but that's like ceremonial, right? He always does it.
I'm guessing. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm. It happened once where a king called Baudouin signed a law because it was like a pro-abortion law, and he was very Christian, and so he refused to sign, but it got taken care of anyway. So that shows you how little it really matters.
Okay. Who gets custody of the king if, the NVA gets its wish and the country is separated?
Actually, I should clarify something, because earlier we spoke about the 2010 elections.
Right.
But there have been elections since then, and the NVA is definitely in power now. You don't need to imagine. It's the case. And in their plans for the country, they have a little paragraph where they say, well, we want to make Belgium a republic and we don't want a king anymore. It never happened.
Okay.
And I'm going to say honestly, I'm kind of disappointed by that, but yeah, you know, there you go. And so who gets custody of the king?
Well, that's the answer. The king goes away if they really want to go through that entirely. I mean, we're talking about theoretical plans here, but
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's mad. Honestly, I don't think Belgium was split. I think it's this very... I just don't think it will happen.
Okay, you were saying it's this very... I'm sorry, it's cutting off regularly.
No,
sorry,
I didn't cut off. I didn't cut off.
You stopped speaking.
I just didn't have an... Yeah, I didn't know what to say. No, I don't think it will happen.
Okay, so obviously there's a lot of very complicated parts. The country seems like it was built to function even when the crises happen. So you're saying that the NVA is in power now. They had a very aggressive agenda for what they wanted to do with the country.
Yep.
What have they done? And are the Flemish part of the country happy with this, or are they disappointed? Or because they're more nationalistic / can we say populist? In their agenda, how far to the right are they?
I would not describe them as populists or I would not say that. I people are gonna hate me for saying this, but I don't hate them politically. Politically, I want Belgium to stay together, but they're not disgusting. I think. Actually, some of them are, but overall, I think they're pretty much okay.
How would you describe their policies then? Is it far right, center right, right right?
Oh, it's hard right, I would say.
It's what, sorry?
A hard right.
Hard right, okay. So take from that what you will. I'm guessing in American terms, it would be center or center right?
Something. Actually, maybe it would be left, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Okay, so they're in place. They're not separating the country, it seems. How do the Flemish and the Wallonians feel about their...
Part of the reason why the country is still together is because we have this coalition system. And so the current government has NVA in it, but it also has French liberals. It has Flemish liberals. It has... no, I think that's about it. Yeah.
Okay.
But it doesn't only have nationalists, Flemish party.
I see.
So I haven't looked at the polls lately, but I think that if there are new elections now, I think there would be some issues for the NVA because they have not, as they said they would be, they have not split the country. And so maybe a lot of voters would be disappointed, maybe. Mm. But yeah.
Yeah,
I have a hard time telling you how Flanders feel about it right now, because, like I said, like we don't have a lot of contact with them.
Okay, there's another part I really want to discuss, and that's the last overarching layer of the European Union. Obviously, Belgium is a seat of many of the EU institutions.
We have the Council, the Commission, the Parliament. And, you know, you go near the Royal Palace and you will see a lot of buildings marked with the EU on it.
So how does the country feel about this? Do you feel like you are part of Europe? Do you want, or the EU rather? Are there Brexiters or Belgiters? I've never heard about that movement.
No, that's never been a question. We are completely pro-Europe.
So even if the country did split... Both parts would still very much want to stay in the EU.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. And so how does the country feel about Belgium being the administrative center of the union? Is it a sense of, like, is it something you're proud of? Or, I don't know, actually, I have no idea how it would feel like.
How would you feel if it was in France? Like, we're pretty neutral about it. Yeah, it's there. Okay.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I mean, as a very, I think that the EU brings a lot of things that too many people aren't aware of, and it's kind of
buildings. The buildings are in Brussels, but
but that's where it happens. Yeah, but that's where it happens. That's where the work is being done. I think I would feel some sense of.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. Yeah, it's pretty cool that it exists, and it's pretty cool that Brussels can be a home to that. Sure.
Okay. So not much to say about the EU. I figured, you know,
talk about the implications, the fact that a lot of international communities, like when I grew up and I went to school, then there were definitely people who moved from other countries to Brussels because it is the capital of the EU. And then they would have to, you know, grow up with us, even though they didn't speak French. Just, you know, it does have some impact.
I think, a generation in the EU that grew up with the, oh my God, I'm forgetting the name of the program, the education exchange program, Erasmus.
Marshall Plan? Oh, okay.
No, the Erasmus program, which... facilitates going to study in other European countries for European students. And I think that has had an impact on a part of the generation, and that has built a lot of ties between those different countries. So I can imagine that having an influx of people from all over the EU would help in that regard as well, make the people who interact with everyone feel a little bit more, you know, again, part of that whole. I wonder if that's that, you know, if you having friends, maybe you, or knowing people from everywhere, do you feel more connected than maybe someone in the deep Flemish countryside or Wallonian countryside might?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've had friends that came from other countries because of Erasmus and then they had to leave. I think you summed it up perfectly. Like it does have, it's very enriching, to meet those people and to exchange with other European countries. And it's like, it's a great thing to have. Yeah. I definitely agree.
Yeah. I think that's one of the great benefits there, but it's something. It's funny with the EU. You see a lot of the negatives of the EU, and certainly there are. But for some reason, we talked about this on the show before. For some reason, you don't. The positives are always obscured. It's almost like the Americans who hate the government because they think about everything that doesn't work, but then they never think about, you know, the postal service or the police force or the military, or when they do, it's kind of disconnected from the government.
I don't know if the Erasmus program is the best example to say that it's super important because it's like a nice bonus, but I agree that it does bring a lot to Europe and that it's not being mentioned enough.
You know, well, yeah, maybe not the Erasmus program is not necessarily the most important thing, but I think it's more important than just sending a few students abroad. I think it's the kind of thing that allows you to feel close to your, not countrymen, but union men and women. I think I mentioned that anecdote on the show every once in a while, but it's always good to repeat. When I was working at Blizzard, the first few months I was, you know, I got to know people and I got to interact with people from many different European countries and, you know, America, the UK, many countries. But specifically, I remember having a coffee with a bunch of people. Some of us were French, some of us were German, and someone made a joke about World War II. You know, and I remember thinking, and we discussed it. We were like, holy crap, do you realize that some of our grandparents, well, not mine, because really I'm not from France originally, but, you know, some of our grandparents might have fought in World War II. And it was, World War II was not just a war only for, you know, economic resources or like, it was an ideological war.
Definitely, yeah.
And we're now joking about that a couple of generations later, and that is incredible.
Were the reactions to the joke different based on whether they were German or French?
Not really. It wasn't that kind of joke. It was just something like, well, universal about war that happened to be. I can't remember exactly, but it wasn't. It wasn't taken with.
It wasn't too offensive.
Yeah, it wasn't too offensive, or it wasn't. It didn't offend anyone, I think. It was more everyone realizing we can discuss this. And it's only been a couple of generations when our grandparents might have been killing each other in that war. And I think to get it back to the point, I think things like Erasmus and that program help with that. You know, it's a part, but it's an important part.
So I think you mentioned that there was a generational aspect to this. And I think what you were getting at is that definitely takes that stuff for granted.
Who takes that stuff for granted?
Generation definitely takes this stuff for granted.
Sorry, you're cutting off again. Some generation. I think it might be your
generation.
Your generation. Okay, yeah. I think it might be your voice. The level at which it activates.
It's too low?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe you want to turn it down a little bit. Usually, I put it at 70 dB.
It's very high.
Thank
you.
So yeah, your generation takes that for granted. That's interesting, actually, taking the fact that we're all together or takes what
that you have the Erasmus program, the fact that we can freely travel between countries and that we all share the same money, the same currency, yeah, I mean, all that stuff we take for granted. And sometimes when I hear older generations, I feel like they really think it's insane, but we don't really feel this way about it.
What I feel is insane, actually, is the idea that some people would want to get rid of it. You know, the idea that some people, the Erasmus program is incredibly enriching, and it's building safety for the future generations, right? Because it ensures you don't really want to go to war. And the union is the same.
Yeah, to get back to what you were saying, like if we're starting from World War II, which was this really a lot of pride, a lot of ideologic differences, and people who want to shoot each other. Whereas the more we're leaning towards a union and people being together and traveling between countries and having this European identity. And when you look at Brexit, you see that the people who voted in favor of Brexit are much older, and that they have this very old school nationalistic pride, and that they are very proud of their country and not Europe. And so we see a trend of, knowing people, sharing something with the other countries, brings us together, whereas being nationalistic and focusing on being proud of your country instead of being proud of the European culture overall, you definitely see a correlation between that and voting in favor of Brexit or not.
Mm. Yeah, it's very possible. I think it could easily slide into a discussion about identity politics almost,
it's always about identity.
Yeah, I guess. There's another thing I did want to ask, because also it's kind of in the realm of the Kingdom of Belgium, I think, but you didn't ever mention the heritage of the Belgian Empire. With the colonies.
You're talking about Congo. I'm gonna be honest, that's something that I never think about. I'm too young for that. We know that some terrible stuff happened where a lot of people got slaughtered in Africa, and still have relationships, or foreign ministry goes a lot to Congo and to the Democratic Republic of Congo. And we do still have relationships, and we still have, we play former owner of these lands. But it's gone. It was the past, and I've never known this past.
Obviously, I don't know when the Congo got its independence back, but I'm guessing not many people.
In the 60s, yeah.
Yeah, most... Well, yeah, it's just, it feels like a part of the, if I'm being honest, about this when I talk about France, but for some reason it is associated with Belgium for me, for maybe mistakenly.
My mother was born in Congo, actually, now that I think about it.
Oh,
that's about it.
Okay. Well, that's still somewhat important. So. All right. I think we've covered almost everything I wanted to talk about. I'm sure we could talk more. Is there anything else you want to bring up about Belgium?
We haven't spoken about waffles. do you like Belgian waffles, Patrick?
Obviously, I don't think I could say I don't with a Belgian person on the podcast. It would be dangerous.
With a gun pointed at your head. I think if you don't have any more questions, then I'm completely satisfied.
I would wonder, what is the cultural contribution that you think Belgium is the most known for in the world? And I would take out the Smurfs equation. I'm curious, maybe something that people might have heard about that they don't know is Belgian. Maybe some people didn't know the Smurfs were Belgian, actually.
Okay. People all the time don't know about that. They don't know it's Belgian. That's for sure. So I'm guessing I can't say Tintin either.
I think that's another one. It's just in the same ballpark.
It's the same realm. Sure.
Yeah.
Let's see. In terms of music, I'm super proud. Oh, there you go. I'm proud. One of the few things I'm proud of. I'm super proud of Jacques Brel. I love this guy. But obviously it's a French singer. So, a French speaking singer. Sorry. So maybe that's not a very international gift to the world. Beer. When I go to San Francisco, there's a lot of Belgian beer over there. So that's a pretty nice gift to the world.
Fair enough. I think it works. Beer is definitely, when you think beer, it's basically Germany and Belgium that stand out, right? So
yeah,
I think that's fair enough.
Germany because they drink a lot of it, and Belgium because we make good beer.
That is an excellent conclusion to this episode, I think.
Passive-aggressive conclusion. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I think that was really interesting. And I'm sure what we discussed here, I'm certain, resonated with people in other countries. And I'm sure they would have things to add and things that they think is similar or different. And if that's the case, please feel free to do so on the blog. Before we move on, would you please tell people where they can find more of you, maybe even of your app?
Oh, my app, right. I'd forgotten about that. No, I don't. In the case of my person, you can find that on Twitter at Geeko86. There will be a link in the description. Mm-hmm. I recently wrote an essay on entrepreneurship in Belgium. So if you want to read that, you can Google my name and then Hobbits in Belgium. That's the name of the essay.
Hobbits.
Yeah, Hobbits in Belgium. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's a funny name because I'm a funny person. So Patrick mentioned my app. I'm the developer of Quick Lyric, which is an app you can find on the Google Play Store, iOS coming soon, hopefully. And it's an app for lyrics. So you're listening to music on Spotify, Apple Music, or MP3. You open the app and instantly you're going to see the lyrics for the music you're listening to, karaoke style. And that's available on Android, and it is actually the most downloaded Belgian app in the world, which is pretty cool. But woohoo! There you go.
That's the app that you quit your university course for.
That's right. Yeah.
And you're now a startup.
I quit my studies to focus on my startup.
Hey, how do I invest in your startup so that I, when you exit in a couple of years, I can become a millionaire?
We don't do crowdfunding. Like, that's something.
No, a second. What do you mean crowdfunding? I have means, my friend. I can invest. Like, I can do seed. How much do you want? Like 20, 30K, 100K?
We're looking right now. We're raising a seed round between 350K and 500K. Oh, so if you have that amount of money, you can call me.
All right. Well, I was going to play big shot with like 10K that I don't have, but all right. Fair enough. So that's... and the name of the app is Quick Lyric without an S. Why did you choose... Actually, I never asked you that. Why no S?
You have actually.
Oh, I have? Okay.
The last time I was on a Phileas Club, people can check.
Okay, and... fair enough. I forgot, tell me again.
The reason you're asking me this question, because why is there no S, is because you're a French-speaking person and that to you it always has an S. But if you were, sir, a proper English speaker, you would know that lyric with no S is also a word and that it means... a passage. Obviously, I can translate it in French.
Oh, you mean a lyric? Okay.
Mm. Yeah, it's a passage inside a song. Yeah. And so there is no S for that, and also mainly because it needs to rhyme. Quick Lyric.
I see. Okay. That's fair enough. So you can go check that app out on the Android Play Store right now, and very soon on the iOS App Store.
Sure. Yeah.
Soon, this year. At some point. This year. Thank you for being on, Guillaume. It's always nice to speak to you. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and Facebook. And you can support the show at patreon.com/thePhileas Club. The link is also in the show notes. You can just click from there, and it's super easy to register on Patreon and then become a patron of this specific show. If you don't know the system, it's super easy. You decide how much you want to give for each episode, and then at the end of the month, you are charged for the amounts of episodes that you contributed to. And this show is funded exclusively by the patrons, who are all wonderful, lovely people who actually are incredibly intelligent. I don't know if it's, you know, correlation or causation. but yeah, they're all quality people. So I think, you know, I wonder if by becoming a patron as well, you would enter that category. Or certainly, if you are in that category, you're a prime candidate for being a patron. So thank you very much for supporting the show to all of those who do. And thank you so much for listening as well. The schedule of the show is a little bit different, or maybe it's going to be a little bit perturbé, we say in French. Disturbed? No, not disturbed. Changed? Because I'm very busy. Not disturbed. Affected. Yeah. Because I'm very busy at the moment you're listening to this with diapers and stuff, hopefully. You know, hopefully that went well. But yeah, we will try to do another show towards the end of the month. We'll see if it's a regular news show or if we do something different for convenience. We'll see. But either way, the show will come back soon. Thank you so much for listening. And if you have anything you want to add, please feel free to go to frenchspin.com and leave a comment on the article for this episode. And you'll also find Pixels over there, which is a show about gaming. You might be interested in that as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.